Esotericism is by its own definition the science of the multiverse, a discipline as exact as any academic subject. This should be obvious to anyone reading the Mahatma Letters to A.P. Sinnett or the works of Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence. In interpreting paranormal entities and phenomena, compare Guénon with the clear and lucid exposition presented by theosophist Charles Leadbeater in his book The Astral Plane. An even greater problem with traditionalism is the ideological link to various political movements of the radical conservative and far right. Theosophy and the esoteric tradition is basically politically left-wing and optimistic. Why is it that so many scholars choose to affiliate themselves with a group that proposes a radical break with modernity? Asks Jacob C. Senholt in his essay Radical Traditionalism and the New Right, published in Esotericism, Religion and Politics, 2012. Theosophical scholar Jocelyn Godwin has this to say anent this phenomenon: it must occur to any objective reader of Evola's works, as of other traditionalists like Guénon and Scown, that for all their nostalgia for authoritarian regimes and theocracies, they enjoyed a freedom of thought and expression that would never have been permitted had they been born into one. p.50. In Sweden, esotericist and far-right activist Lars Adelskog presents a peculiar mix of traditionalism and esotericism. He is a proponent of the esoteric tradition as presented by Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lawrence and has also translated René Guin's classic The Reign of Quantity and the Signs of the Times into Swedish. But Lawrence and Guénon are spiritual opposites. Guénon actually regard the esoteric tradition represented by Lawrence as definitely satanic. Adelskog's syncretism is like trying to promote the political philosophies of Karl Marx and Edmund Burke on the same website. In his book Knowledge of Life 3, chapter Occult Sects, Henry T. Lawrence has some sharp critical comments on the writings of Kurt Almqvist, one of the first Swedish Guénon-inspired traditionalists. Kurt Almqvist, Ph.D., published in 1959 a little book entitled Den glömda dimension, The Forgotten Dimension. This work is typical of a pseudo-occultism making much of itself in our times. His use of the term dimension alone is absurd. His progressionism is faith in the guesswork of ignorance. His definition of metaphysical as being beyond the cosmos indicates a serious confusion of ideas. His definitions of soul, spirit, intellect, individuality, the ego, the self are utterly misleading. Almqvist has a lot to say about the metaphysical knowledge he ascribes to the medieval builders' guilds. In any case, they did not possess esoteric knowledge, a fact of which Freemasonry is the best demonstration. As for the rest, we are served a rehash of Indian yoga philosophy and Christian mysticism. Following the traditionalist school as a ufologist becomes an intellectual backlash, a la Gordon Creighton. It is infinitely more stimulating and rewarding, as an alternative working hypothesis, to study the taxonomy of paranormal entities and phenomena in the classic tomes of Blavatsky, Leadbeater, Hodgson and Lawrence. And you will probably not end up on the far right of the political spectrum. Paradigms and intellectual integrity. Belief is the enemy is an often quoted maxim from one of my favorite nonconformist authors, American journalist John A. Keel. The actual quote can be found on page 46 in the original 1975 edition of his classic The Mothman Prophecies. Keel's wonderful humor and refreshingly irreverent attitude to our forbidden sciences was a breath of fresh air to me when I first encountered his books as a young ufologist in the 1970s. He became, in several ways, a mentor in the often wacky underworld of cults and strange beliefs you are confronted with as a field investigator of UFOs and paranormal phenomena. As my new and rather controversial book Return of the Gods, UFOs and the Esoteric Tradition, has just been published, I find it necessary to issue a few statements as I anticipate that several readers will miss the point of the book. Skeptics will probably relegate me to the cultist crowd and proclaim that I have lost my intellectual integrity, if I ever had one. Naive New Agers will believe they have found a kindred soul and send me their latest communication from Master Xyz, confirming all I have written. Then I am reminded of a quote from that wonderful iconoclast Charles Fort: "Now and then admirers of my good works write to me, and try to convert me into believing things that I say." My book can be read on several levels. First and the most obvious, it is a documentation of the influence of ideas from the esoteric tradition on the development of the international UFO movement. In Sweden, this is especially noticeable, as the first UFO organizations in 1957-58 were inaugurated by active members of the Theosophical Society, EDIA. Secondly, I present a version of Valli's esoteric intervention theory as a possible scenario to explain their experiences of some of the first generation UFO contactees: George Adamski, Orfeo Angelussi, Daniel Fry, George Van Tassel, and Howard Menger. Finally, I use the esoteric tradition as an alternative paradigm or roadmap studying the totality of UFO and paranormal phenomena. While Valli in much of his writings concentrates on the messengers of deception, I suggest that there also may be other and somewhat nicer players in the game. I hope that most readers will understand that to me the esoteric intervention theory is only a theory or alternative hypothesis. As a critical and intellectual humanist, I find the only viable attitude to the esoteric tradition to regard it as a challenging paradigm in trying to interpret UFOs and paranormal phenomena. And most important, I may be wrong. That is for coming generations of ufologists, 14s, esotericists, academics and students of paranormal phenomena to decide. Critics will of course also notice that I present a conspiracy theory. But it is something so trend-breaking and untimely as a conspiracy of the good guys, what I jokingly refer to as the HIA, Higher Intelligence Agency. A review of my book can be found at the blog Nye El Convito by Swedish poet and author Muhammad Omar. Students of esotericism who happen to be too much of believers will perhaps be surprised to learn that the belief is their enemy attitude is actually recommended by the custodians of the ancient wisdom. Alice Bailey, amanuensis for the Tibetan, constantly reiterates that the information imparted is to be regarded as a working hypothesis. Our attitude should be that of reasonably inquiry, and our interest that of the investigating philosopher, willing to accept an hypothesis on the basis of its possibility. Those open-minded investigators who are willing to accept its fundamentals as a working hypothesis until these are demonstrated to be erroneous, they will be frankly agnostic. Alice Bailey, A Treatise on White Magic. In this treatise adjacent to the discussion on hypothesis, there is also an interesting comment on paranormal phenomena. "We stand now towards the close of a great transition period, and the subtler realms of life are closer than ever before. Unusual phenomena and inexplicable happenings are commoner than at any time heretofore, whilst matters telepathic, psychic and peculiar occupy the attention even of skeptics, scientists and religionists. Reasons for the appearance of phenomena are being everywhere sought, and societies are formed for their investigation and demonstration." Finally, some UFO news. Yesterday the UFO Sweden board held its meeting at the UFO premises. Anders Lodgren presented an interesting offer we have recently received for new and very much larger premises to house the entire archive. The offer looks promising even from an economic viewpoint. Should this become a reality, one of our most cherished dreams will come true, as the possibility of also building a museum is of the project. The UFO board will inspect the premises as soon as possible. Mashias, Fire and Supernatural Horror. One of my responsibilities at Norrköping Public Library is arranging academic lectures, inviting Swedish scholars and authors engaged in current cultural and scientific debate. This activity has by now developed into a form of literary salon, opening with my dialogue with the author followed by a lecture and often a very vivid and stimulating discussion. On October 2, I invited Mashias Fye, assistant professor in literary criticism at Stockholm University and lecturer in literary criticism at Jönköping University. He is the author of several books on gothic fiction, also referred to as supernatural horror in literature. But he is also well-versed in various esoteric currents and co-editor with Per Faxneldar for Borgade Tecken. Esoterism i Vasterlandsklitteratur, Hidden Signs. Esotericism in Western Literature. In this book, Fire has a chapter on esotericism in the writings of Selma Lagerlöf, one of my favorite Swedish authors. Before the lecture, I had promised Mashias Fire a tour of the AFU facilities, as he was especially interested in studying our collections on ghosts and older Swedish books on paranormal experiences. From Norrköping Central Station, we went directly to the archive, where we spent most of the time in our two library facilities. Mashias was delighted to discover several volumes of interest for his current research, and as a fan of supernatural horror, he was of course fascinated by the grey alien in one of our shelves. We could have spent many hours comparing notes and ideas on various aspects of horror fiction and paranormal phenomena, but there was only time for a quick AFU tour. Mashias Fire in the AFU library. Notice the Lovecraft titles to the right. Mashias gave a brilliant and erudite lecture on the history of Gothic fiction from antiquity to the present day. On my question regarding the best horror author ever, he was somewhat evasive, but H.P. Lovecraft came very high up on the list. Mashias is the author of Dead But Dreaming, Lovecraft and Magic Modernism. This is a study of the themes in Lovecraft's fiction and his ideas on religion, spiritualism and science. There were several real fans of Gothic fiction in the audience, so the concluding question and answer session resulted in an interesting and well-informed discussion. One woman in the audience also had a real ghost story to relate, where there were several witnesses involved. This made us all feel that the borderline between fiction and reality is indistinct, as is actually the case with our subjects. Lovecraft could have loved that. Generally, this was an exciting and delightful evening full of magic and mystery. Jadu and Esoterica. Anomalous Books continued to publish excellent titles, both new and classics, on UFOs, Fortenna and the paranormal. As I have often referred to John Keel in various blog entries, I was especially pleased to find new editions of his seminal works in the book list. This week I received my copy of the 1957 classic Jadu, a travel diary of his adventures in the Orient. When the book first appeared, Keel promoted it by performing a snake charming act in a pet store window in New York City. As you immerse yourself in this well-written and entertaining book, it becomes obvious why chapter 1 begins with, "I am a professional cliff hanger." This new edition has additional material not found in the 1957 version. A few typewritten pages of manuscript found in John Keel's apartment after his death and edited out of the old edition. It is the story of Keel's German girlfriend Light, called Ingrid in the book, whom he met while working for the American Forces Network in Frankfurt, Germany in the beginning of the 1950s. It is a heartbreaking story of love found and lost, partly because of lack of money and also a young man's dream of breaking free of a restricted life to look for adventure and mystery. I wanted to see Timbuktu and Baghdad, not Stuttgart and Mannheim. I wanted to walk among the ruins of temples, not factories. I wanted to dig into the dark secrets of Egypt and India and write about Jadu instead of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Later in life, after his involvement in the UFO enigma, Keel referred to Jadu in Operation Trojan Horse. Previous to all this, I was a typical hard-boiled skeptic. I sneered at the occult. I had once published a book, Jadu, which denigrated the mystical legends of the Orient. But this is not quite true. Although it is written in typical Keel fashion with a critical and humorous spirit, there are several experiences and phenomena in the book which he can't explain and truly puzzles the young adventurer. He hear the sound of and get a short glimpse of what could be the abominable snowman. A mystical llama give Keel a demonstration of levitation while other llamas move chairs by mental power and prove their ability of remote viewing by telling of a fire going on in a distant village. When Keel checked later, there had been a fire in the village. Instead of denigrating these claims, he writes, "There was no explanation for these things. I thought I knew all the tricks of the phony Western mediums, but this demonstration stymied me." Although a hard-boiled skeptic, Keel does not appear as the typical debunker in Jadu, rather as the inquisitive romantic adventurer. And I love his humorous comments, like this one, One Lama told me the way to vanish into thin air is to make the mind a complete blank. If this is true, then I know several people who should have disappeared long ago. If you haven't read Jadu, you have an evening of mystery and adventure waiting. And this world will probably get one more John Keel fan. This week has also seen some additions to my collection of esoterica. Scholarly volumes on what is in the academic world named Western esotericism is appearing at an increasing pace. An interesting cultural change regarding this earlier taboo subject, which I have commented upon in an earlier blog entry. Introduction series to Western esotericism is a new project to serve as basic handbooks for students and scholars. There are 7 volumes projected, and the first, The Academic Study of Western Esotericism, has just been published, written by Drive Tim Rudbog, who holds an MA research degree in History of Religion with Philosophy at the University of Copenhagen. The cover illustration of the first volume is a real wet blanket, but the content is a good introduction to the subject. The academic term Western esotericism is, in my view, something of a misnomer, as a basic idea in esotericism is that it represents an ancient and global tradition. This problem is noted by Rudbog, who in his introduction asks whether Western shadow will be considered valid in the future. An esotericist would probably answer that the teaching is universal. The knowledge of reality or worldview presented by the Elder Brothers, the planetary hierarchy, the inner government of the world, who since time immemorial have been the custodians of the ancient wisdom. One chapter in the book is devoted to the traditionalist perspective on esotericism. Traditionalism, or perennialism, is a radical conservative offshoot of the esoteric tradition and is usually critical of modernism, humanism, and empiricism. Rudbog noticed that many of its adherents are academics, which has had an influence on the academic study of religion, philosophy, art, and esotericism. But he does not mention whether there also are adherents of classic esotericism within the academic community. Perhaps that is still one of the taboos to be overcome. An esotericist can, of course, be just as eminent a scholar of esotericism as a Buddhist studying Buddhism. As a philologist and student of the esoteric tradition, I have now and then been asked of my own view regarding esotericism. In an earlier blog, I tried to give a position statement on this issue. Basically, I consider the esoteric tradition the most interesting and intellectually best formulated alternative hypothesis or paradigm when trying to explain many UFO and paranormal phenomena, including the enigma of consciousness. Esotericism, in my definition, is foremost the writings of H.P. Blavatsky, Alice Bailey, and Henry T. Lawrence. The only tenable position, though, as an intellectual humanist, is to regard the ancient wisdom as a working hypothesis. Belief is the enemy, as John Keel often stated. He was not an esotericist, but definitely one of the most fascinating reductionist, materialist paradigm crackers of our time. Handbook of the Theosophical Current. On several occasions I have commented on the fact that there are no doctoral theses on the history of the Theosophical Society in Sweden. This lack of academic interest is certainly surprising, seen in the context that Theosophy had a very extensive cultural impact in Sweden between 1891-1930. Theosophical ideas influenced authors like August Strindberg, Gustav Froding, and Selma Lagerlöf. Well-known members were Countess Constance Wachtmeister, psychologists Sidney L. Rutz and Brage Adlius, and painter Gustav Stad, member of the Rackstad colony of artists in Värmland. Swedish King Oscar II, 1829-1907, was strongly influenced by Theosophy and invited both Henry Steelcott and Annie Besant for audiences at the Royal Castle. Academic research on theosophical history and the esoteric tradition is sadly lacking in Sweden, but international interest has been on the rise for several decades. The latest example is the 494-page tome Handbook of the Theosophical Current, with contributions from 20 scholars specializing in religion and philosophy. Editors are Olaf Hammer, Professor of the History of Religions, University of Southern Denmark, and Mikael Rothstein, Associate Professor at the Department of Cross, Cultural and Regional Studies, University of Copenhagen, Denmark. That Theosophy and its many off, Shoots are important chapters in cultural history, is very clearly emphasized by Hammer and Rothstein in the introduction. They even place theosophy as one of the modern world's most important religious traditions and vastly understudied. Handbook of the Theosophical Current covers classical theosophy, Alice Bailey, Rudolf Steiner, the I Am Movement, Summit Lighthouse and the Rerichs. But there is no mention of a Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lorenzi, which is surprising as his books have now been translated in many languages and his contribution to the esoteric tradition has been noticed from many countries. Handbook of the Theosophical Current is definitely an important and basic textbook on the esoteric tradition. But why the extreme price? $220 from Amazon, 1.626 Swedish krona from Bokus. This makes it a tome of interest only to the real connoisseur, collector of esoterica or the university libraries. So far I have only read 6 of the 20 contributions. As my special area of interest is the historical and phenomena connection between the UFO contactee movement and the esoteric tradition, I will just give a few comments on the chapter Mahatmas in Space by Mikhail Rothstein. Unfortunately, Mikhail Rothstein's contribution is the weakest chapter of those I have studied. A peculiar tendency among academic researchers of the UFO contactee phenomenon is to concentrate on the peripheral and extreme UFO cults like Unarius, Arius Society or the Real Movement, while more or less ignore the most important and influential contactees like George Adamski, Orfeo Angelusi, Daniel Fry, George Van Tassel and Howard Menger. Mikhail Rothstein concentrates on George King or his Arius Society. As a first introduction to the connection between UFO contactees and theosophy, Rothstein's contribution gives a rather misleading view of the subject. What should have been included is a study of theosophical themes and ideas in the philosophy of the 5 contactees I mentioned. George King was regarded as an outsider and quite far out even among mainstream contactees. King never, to my knowledge, participated in the large giant rock spacecraft conventions hosted by George Van Tassel. A good popular book which presents the mainstream UFO contactees is Flying Saucer Pilgrimage, 1957, by Bryant and Helen Reeve. Even more remarkable is that Rothstein never mentions the large influence of Borderland Sciences Research Foundation, BSRA, created in 1945, on the UFO contact movement. Already in 1946, BSRA declared that an unknown flying object observed over San Diego was an extraterrestrial spacecraft. An information received by the unusually gifted medium Mark Probert. BSRA's first 2 directors, Mead Lane and Riley Crabb, were much influenced by theosophy. During his stay at Hawaii, Riley Crabb was leader of the Honolulu Lodge of the Theosophical Society. Mikhail Rothstein writes that the Theosophical Society and theosophists normally disregarded or even actively oppose the Space Brother perspective. This is a misleading statement, as there were many theosophists who took an active in the UFO movement. In Sweden, the UFO movement in the 1950s was actually started by members of the Theosophical Society, EDIA. Boris de Zirkov, E.L. Gardner and N. Sriram wrote articles where they were very open to the possibility of visits by flying saucers. Danish theosophist and liberal Catholic Bishop Otto Viking wrote an article, Flying Saucers and Religion, for Flying Saucer Review in 1955. In 1964, his theosophical UFO novel, A World Intervenes, was published by Exposition Press in New York. Academic research on the UFO contact movement and its relation to the esoteric tradition is to a large extent uncharted territory. Good contributions have been made by J. Gordon Melton, David Stuppel and Nicholas Goodrick, Clark. But my wish is that scholars will start researching the mainstream contactees of the 1950s. Hopefully they will then also discover that much of the basic empirical data can be found at the Archives for UFO Research in Norrköping, Sweden. 3. UFOs, Paranormal Phenomena and Esotericism. ETIA and the Esoteric Tradition. The scholarly and critical investigator of UFO and paranormal phenomena will usually, sooner or later, come to the realization that materialist, reductionist mainstream science cannot account for the wide variety of intriguing phenomena reported and documented worldwide. To discover this fact becomes an intellectual challenge facing all serious and honest investigators. Then the real existential problem begins. Few researchers are willing to publicly enter the Ardis path of the heretic or iconoclast, especially if their academic or scientific credibility will be questioned by colleagues and friends. Entering forbidden science is perhaps today safest in the secluded company among like-minded investigators working together and sharing data as an invisible college. This becomes even more important as investigators begin the complicated and controversial journey of trying to discover an alternative working hypothesis or paradigm where these phenomena can be understood or explained. Like myself, many researchers and scholars have found the esoteric tradition or ancient wisdom to be the intellectually most interesting and challenging alternative worldview. Several of my guides and mentors in forbidden science have, after many years of research and study, indicated that this is the direction in which answers may eventually be found. Here are three quotes relative to this issue. Previous to all this, I was a typical hard-boiled skeptic. I sneered at the occult. I had once published a book, Jadu, which denigrated the mystical legends of the Orient. I tried to adopt a very scientific approach to ufology, and this meant that I scoffed at the many contactee reports. But as my experiences mounted and investigations broadened, I rapidly changed my views. I have dealt with thousands of honest, sincere witnesses by mail, phone, and in person. My skepticism has melted away, and I have turned from science to philosophy. The history of ufology should be placed within an esoteric context. Throughout history, there has been a tradition of higher knowledge, and the claim that it was accessible to us, if only we agreed to be tested, to work through certain spiritual problems. That's the meaning of the Hermetic schools. The UFO problem, the question of parapsychology, are central to this business. Looking for the solution isn't just a scientific project, it's a quest, an initiation, an enigma like that of the Sphinx. Jacques Vallée, Forbidden Science 2, p. 211. My interest in metaphysics, in this life, dates back to 1934 when I discovered the not inconsiderable library of the Minneapolis Lodge of the Theosophical Society, and tried to read through it in record time. Since coming to the mainland, my lectures have been concerned with the problem of relating flying saucer data, and phenomena, to the teachings of the mystery schools. I believe you will agree this is no easy task. If I have one goal in life, it is union, uncompromising search for truth, whatever that might be, and wherever it may lead. Riley Crabb, about the author. Round Robin, Volume 15, Number 4, July, August 1959. The esoteric tradition as formulated by A.O. Helena Blavatsky, Charles Leadbeater, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence is a consistent and rational worldview, with a profound humanism at its core. A science of the multiverse, also presenting a detailed taxonomy of multiverse entities and paranormal phenomena of interest as an alternative working hypothesis to the field investigator. According to the esoteric tradition, we are not alone in the universe. There is life on all planets in our own solar system and beyond, on planets in other star systems. But, and this is highly significant, the esoteric tradition is of the same opinion as today's astronomers and astrophysicists that higher organic life is impossible on the other planets in our solar system. I have collected a few statements on etiquette relating to the issue of organic versus etheric bodies, by Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lawrence, comparing them with empirical data from a few interesting UFO contactees. Unless otherwise stated, all quotes are from the English online versions of the Henry T. Lawrence books. Only on our planet do the individuals of the fourth natural kingdom develop through organisms and reincarnation. On other planets, development is done through aggregate envelopes, which subsist until the individual has acquired the consciousness of higher molecular kinds and the envelopes corresponding to that consciousness. The Way of Man, Introductions, 1.39.1. Our planet, Terra, is the only planet in the solar system where organic life is possible. On other planets, man's lowest envelope is an aggregate envelope and not an organic one. Knowledge of Life 2 Conscious Development 7.2.9 Regarding the Sources.